And we now have a third and final oral argument. We have one other non-oral matter that we'll be proceeding with afterwards. This third matter for oral argument, Tracy Nicole Odle, on behalf of minor children petitioner, respondent Jonathan James Odle, A240202, and please correct me if I mispronounced the name, the last name. As council's aware, you can be seated, thank you. The podium does have a clock, a timer on it for purposes of keeping track of your 15 minutes and 5 minutes rebuttal in the case of Pellet's counsel. There is a button in the front somewhere on the face to allow it to rise or fall depending on the comfort level for you as well. And I think it's on the middle. Thank you for pointing it out. We are recording these proceedings. Judge Wheelock, Judge Kirk joined me, Judge Sleater, and we're also live streaming it. There'll be an audio recording only available on the court's website within 24 hours, so no other recording is allowed. And we do ask counsel to identify yourself for the record and whom you represent when you begin your comments. And so with that comment, counsel for appellant, you may approach and begin.
My name is Jessica Rugani, R-U-G-A-N-I. I'm appearing on behalf of Mr. Jonathan Odle. May it please the court, counsel. This is an order for protection appeal based on evidentiary rulings that were not properly made by the district court, resulting in an erroneously issued order for protection prohibiting Mr. Odle, the appellant in this matter, who I'll refer to as Dad, from having contact with the respondent in this matter, who I'll refer to as Mom, and only supervised visitation with the two children, child one, age 9, and child two, age 6. The couple was together 10 years, and in June 2023, Mom wanted to end the relationship, resulting in Dad moving out of the family home in July. The couple engaged in a practice often called nesting, where the children remained in the home, and Dad would leave during the week, come back on weekends to enjoy parenting time with the kids. In November 2003, Mom did file an order for protection petition alleging domestic violence on behalf of the two minor children and herself. There was an evidentiary hearing held November 21st, after which the district court issued an order signed December 5th, 2023, granting the order for protection and permitting only supervised visitation with child one and child two. Throughout the hearing, the court made numerous evidentiary missteps, beginning with his comments how, since this was going to be a divorce case, we were going to do everything twice. Although the parties had been moving toward a dissolution, at the time of this hearing, no paperwork had been filed. There was no matter before the court that foretold that. Based on the court's order, we found the court focused on two instances which he based his decision to order the order for protection and supervised visitation. The two instances included a 10-21-23 instance, the Halloween instance, and then several instances between July and October where Dad parked his vehicle, work vehicle, and ice house in such a way that it limited Mom's ability to immediately pull out of the driveway and leave. So I'd like to focus on the evidence that was presented around those and touch on others.
Counsel, on the one, you have a video that's pretty disadvantageous to your client. Wouldn't you agree?
Did you say why do I? Or
no, wouldn't you agree?
Oh, I do, in that it shows he entered the room of Mom when she asked him to leave. But I would note that he appears to leave right away as soon as he does go inside, which buttresses his claim that he needed his cell phone, and after he collected his cell phone, he was prepared to leave. It was the family home. He had lived there 10 years. It seems a little convenient that this is the only video of anything we've ever had, that it could have been a situation where she baited him by taking his phone and ran into the room, knowing he couldn't leave because of work commitments on the phone. But it's definitely shows that she was telling him to leave, and he came through the door. And there was no physical assault that took place. In any of the allegations, this order for protection was issued not one allegation of physical violence against a person. Definitely, she said she was afraid. And watching the video, you can hear she sounds afraid in her voice.
Well, an assault where you cause fear in someone is just as serious as an assault where there's physical contact, at least as far as the criminal penalties are concerned.
That is very true. In this instance, though, I'm saying in 10 years, there's never been any allegation where there was physical violence, where the police was called, that would necessarily give her more of a reason to be afraid of herself or her children. And when it came to her children regarding the incident in the video, I believe her testimony was that she was afraid of what they might hear. Not that he would harm the children, but what he might hear.
Isn't it true, counsel, you don't need a history in order to meet the statute? And it sounds a bit like, and I saw this I thought of this when reading your brief, that much of your argument would ask us to reweigh the facts, which we don't do, or not to defer to the credibility findings of the judge, because a lot of those issues you had, I assume, were part of the litigation and presented the judge with an opportunity to deny, arguably, based on those same points you're making. But we don't do that on appeal.
Understood. To that, I would point to the testimony about the children, specifically the hearsay statements that were attributed to child one, 9 years old, when on three different instances, mom testified, she told me she was scared, she said she was scared, when prompted by counsel, mom said, yes, she was scared. Then she later said, she was scared to even hug him. She was scared of things he would do to me. We can assume that the court was using an analysis under 59502 because he references the child's age. And of course, children under 10 years of age are presumed competent to testify unless the court finds that they are not able to accurately remember and they don't have a capacity to remember and testify.
Counsel, you could have called the kids.
Pardon?
Couldn't you have called the kids?
Could I have called the case?
No, called the kids as witnesses.
I guess that was a strategy decision by prior counsel. I'm not aware of what went into that. Could Mr. Odell have called the kids to testify on his behalf? I don't think there was a rule prohibiting it, but there is a rule saying that their testimony, their hearsay testimony, their testimony comes in through mom if the court finds that the child isn't competent, and there was no such finding here.
Either party could have called the children as witnesses and had them testify.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That includes you.
Yeah, I think you're right. I would note that for several weeks prior to the hearing, Dad didn't have access to the children because of the ex parte order. The statements by Mom were largely resulting from very leading questions by counsel regarding what the kids said. For instance, she was scared. She was scared to even hug him. She was scared of things he would do to me.
But the court didn't really rely on the children's statements in its order at all, did it?
Well, the court really didn't make any findings in that regard. It didn't say that it was the safety of the children. It didn't need to, but it didn't say anything about best interest verbally or in the statement. What it said is The events on Halloween happened in the presence of the children, the yelling and shouting. And that was the only mention of children in the court's order.
Isn't there a box check that the safety of the children requires, and then they went into the supervised visitation? Wouldn't that be sufficient for us to review, or at least review for clear error?
I'm sorry, I was looking at, are we looking at the bottom of page one, or what were you looking at?
It's paragraph number 8 of the order, looks like page 19 of the appendix. The safety of the petitioner and the children require that parenting time be limited as follows, and then goes into the supervised parenting schedule. Although it looks like it, actually now I'm looking at the box wasn't actually checked, but I presume we can presume it was checked in the sense that it's the parenting times underneath there, but wouldn't that be sufficient for us to review for clear error that the court indeed found it wasn't an implied finding, and then look at the record to see if the testimony, for instance, a mother that the children heard this and at least one was crying, as I recall, be sufficient evidence for that limited parenting time?
I guess I don't disagree with that, the court should review that for clear error. I believe...
And under the statute, domestic abuse statute, wouldn't that be sufficient to allow for supervised parenting time without need to going through the 518 best interest factors?
My understanding is that it's safety concern for the children. And is the court saying that this paragraph here represents the court enunciating safety concerns?
What appears to be the finding of the court, given that it limited the supervised time.
But based on what? Based on mom's statements, yeah, she said she was scared, which was not admissible under the hearsay.
So even if we agree with you that those statements were hearsay and that they should not have been admitted, I believe in order for us to find in your favor, we also have to find that there was prejudice. And I guess I'm wondering what you would point us to identify the prejudice here to your client.
The prejudice to my client is because the mom was allowed to testify multiple times about the fear of the child, I believe the court relied on that, these statements that should not have come in under an excited utterance or hearsay catch-all, and issued supervised parenting time when the only basis the mom enunciated was he wasn't as comfortable as she was in parenting duties, which I think a lot of moms would say about.
Well, do you agree that there was also evidence in the form of testimony by mom that the children were afraid, that she testified to that independent of testimony about what they did or did not say?
I would say there was scant testimony about that that seemed to only come when there were very leading questions about it, such as, was she scared or did she say anything? We don't know when she said she was scared to hug him. We don't know if it was the next day. We don't know if it's even related to this specific event. It's just kind of floating out there that at some point child one said these things. And I think it's prejudicial then as a whole to attribute them all to this instance and this day. There's certainly the video that the court can look at and say, well, I heard a child crying. Accordingly, the children need protecting from the dad. But I think that's a bridge too far to order supervised visitation when there's no allegations by anyone of harm to the children or any behavior toward the children except for they were present when dad was agitated, his voice was raised, and he shouldered in the door of his own bedroom. Under 807, of course, written notice was appropriate if mom intended to offer the hearsay children statement of the children, which she didn't. And again, it doesn't appear to be an excited utterance because we don't know when the statements were made, what influence of excitement the children may have been under. They're also mentioned in relation to a carjack situation. I'm sorry, I'm not saying that right. Tire jack, that's it, where child one mentioned being scared, but we don't know if she said it right then when dad was there or another time later. So I just don't think there's a very clear record, and the court doesn't say in its order that he's concerned about the safety of the children based on this. The short-time parking instances, another basis for this order and the supervised visitation, I mentioned nothing about the children. There's no reference to anything regarding the kids. There is testimony that I understand it's not yours to sort out, which was a truth teller, where dad says she never asked him to move his cars, and that was how he commonly parked, to unload and load his vehicles for a short period of time. For those reasons, Your Honors, I believe that the OFP, especially in relation to supervised visitation, should be vacated, and Mr. Odle should be able to see his children not in a supervised visitation. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel, and you will have 5 minutes of rebuttal, and Counsel will respond it. When you're ready, you may approach and begin your comments.
May it please the court. Attorney Carrie Doom here on behalf of the respondent, Tracy Odle. Counsel, it will be fairly brief today, Your Honors, as I do not have much to add beyond what has already been covered in my brief previously submitted to the court. But I do just want to kind of follow up on a few points that were raised during appellant's time here today. First, I think the court is exactly spot on with the fact of this question about, even if the court impermissibly admitted some hearsay statements, and again, as for the reasons outlined in our brief, we don't believe that there was any impermissible hearsay admitted into evidence. But even if it did, the appellant here has not established any prejudice as a result of that. And I think that's really evident in the fact of what the court found when it based its order for protection. It was this conduct on October 31st, which was depicted in video, and which was a stipulated to exhibit at this order for protection hearing. The court relied on what was depicted in that video in making its determination. It relied on the fact that the children were heard screaming in that video. Mom was heard screaming in that video. And that is really what the court, particularly when we're talking about supervised visits or making this order for protection, about fear of imminent harm, was relying on. It did reference as well the incidences of blocking in, but even if we set that argument aside, in and of itself, the video footage shows and wholly supports the court's findings in this case, not only as it relates to the order for protection as it relates to mom, but also for the supervised visitation as it relates to the children. And again, as Your Honor correctly pointed out, the court did exactly what it needed to do. It made a finding that indicated that the safety of the petitioner and the minor children requires that parenting time be limited, and expands why. A court in an order for protection proceeding does not need to go through and analyze the statutory best interest factors. This court has made that clear. Again, this is a mechanism to kind of move forward, and the district court in issuing the order for protection says, this is what we're doing for supervised parenting time. This can be further modified in the dissolution file, right? It's moving it forward in that direction. So again, the court, there's no evidence before this court that shows that the district court abused its discretion in issuing this order for protection, either on behalf of mom or as it relates to the supervised visitation pieces for the minor children. Again, much of appellant's argument wants this court to reweigh the credibility of the witnesses, to reassess, even when looking at the safety of the children, to reassess and look at what dad's version of what happened that day when he pushed in the door, I think is how it was characterized. That wasn't pushing in a door. That was shoving the door open with your shoulder. And that incident alone wholly supports the district court's ordering of the order for protection, as well as the supervised visitation contained within that order for protection. Additionally, there was some notion that there wasn't a history or that there wasn't a physical assault. Neither of those things are required for the finding of intentional infliction of imminent harm. That's all that is required on the domestic abuse statute. We don't have to show that there was an actual assault. Simply, the petitioner has to show beyond by a preponderance of the evidence that she was put in imminent fear of physical harm.
Well, isn't that an actual assault?
Well, to clarify then, there doesn't
Under
need
the
to be the,
fear
the physical.
Fear subdivision of an assault.
Correct. Yes, the fear subdivision. And that's all that's required. And whether or not there's a history doesn't negate the conduct of the appellant on that
Didn't
day.
Didn't the court find there was some history?
The court found, specifically in looking at the court's order, the kind of what it references is the October 31st incident that occurred, and then also references that a respondent had blocked petitioner's egress from the home several times with his vehicle. So that was essentially the extent of the kind of history component there. The court did not make any further findings, nor was it required to make further findings in that regard. But really, as you look at the court's findings, it's that incident really on October 31st that was at the heart of it, and then also kind of that additional history of blocking in respondents or blocking in mom at the home, which again also has nothing to do with any alleged inadmissible hearsay of the children as alleged by appellant either.
Counsel, can I inquire? You made reference to the judge, and it's in paragraph, I'm looking at it now on paragraph 20 of the order regarding the parties may agree to amend it based on what they either agree to in a dissolution file or maybe a court makes an order after findings. And so one of the issues that's raised here, it doesn't get to the heart of my question, I think, but there is a concern that any time there's supervision ordered based on a single incident or largely a single incident, as you point out, the video and the statements of the witness is much less than is required in the dissolution. So do you read that paragraph 20 to mean that if once there's a decision made by a family court judge that supervision no longer is required, the judge here would allow an amendment to match that so you don't have inconsistent orders?
Yes. So in practical experience, we have this happen a lot, right? We have an order for protection that's issued. There's a corresponding dissolution file. And as things progress in a dissolution file, whether it's because additional programming is engaged in or different things, it does allow the family court, the dissolution file, to essentially modify the order for protection. So we're not in a situation where we have to go back and we have a conflicting order that says, okay, we've got this now in the dissolution file, and which one is the governing order? So it's pretty common that we see this coming out when we have these corresponding or correlating files in that sense that it would move forward in that regard. So,
thank you.
Yes. Your Honors, at the end of the day, appellants have simply failed to establish any abuse of this district court's discretion in issuing this order for protection. The evidence was telling. The video evidence was very telling about how this impacted or the conduct and how it played out for mom and these children. The order was wholly appropriate, wholly supported by the record, and we are asking this court to affirm it in its entirety. If there's no further questions, I've covered what I needed, but certainly
there,
available.
There appear to be none. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
And counsel for appellant, you now have 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you. Just briefly, even if the court's judges find that this order for protection was proper based alone on Exhibit 1, it was still an overstep to order supervised visitation of the children when the children were not directly involved in Exhibit 1 except for crying. They're 6 years old and 9 years old. Children cry all the time. There's no allegation that dad is intending to hurt children, has ever hurt children, has ever done anything but be a kind parent. And mom's stated concerns are that he's not as comfortable in the parenting role as she is, and she doesn't like what he says about her in front of the children. And if that were the standard, there would be a lot of parents that would have to have supervised visitation. That's just not the standard. That's all I have. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you to both counsel. We appreciate your answers to our questions today, your briefing in the matter. We will now take the matter under advisement. We'll be issuing a ruling within 90 days. You have a good day. And we will be adjourning now to consider our fourth matter, which is a non-oral proceeding.
Please rise.